Welcome one and all to the Sunday morning meeting at the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We have a lecture in store for you today, and someone else is going to do the announcements. So we just want to say, if you're coming into the building, please join us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free zone for the benefit of those with sensitivities. And during the pandemic, it has often been a comforting and joyful experience to Zoom to a meeting. It is important to recall the ULT declaration. Philadelphia ULT meetings maintain anonymity, offer no crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. Participants speak directly to the chairperson when called upon. These are traditions that are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of theosophy without the distractions of any social differentiations or personal attributes. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And at this time, we will have the announcements and the declaration.
Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, does not concern itself, dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view, too absorbing and too lofty, to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a true realization of the self. Founder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, as in every constitution, bylaw, prophecy, sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise, be the better able to help and teach others. True theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The announcements for the Philadelphia Lodge, Sunday, March 6, 2022. All lodge meetings are open to the public, and everyone is welcome to attend. Lodge meetings are held specifically to disseminate the philosophy of theosophy and to make sure that theosophy is always available to others, just as others kept theosophy available for us. Declaration is the common ground among all the lodges, yet each lodge remains autonomous. Lodge activities are sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. If interested in volunteering in any way, please contact one of the lodges. A listing can be found at the Phoenix Lodge website. Straight line theosophical materials may be purchased directly from many of the lodges or purchased from Theosophy Company in Los Angeles, California, or downloaded from the Phoenix Lodge website, or purchased on site only on Sunday mornings at the Philadelphia Lodge. At lodge meetings, participants are asked to direct all comments to the chair in order to foster and help maintain an atmosphere of anonymity and impersonality. The lodge meetings in Philadelphia are held on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The Sunday presentations are from 11 until 12 noon. The Ossory Hall opens at 10:30. These meetings are recorded and the podcasts will be made available later at the Philadelphia Lodge website. It is the only on-site, also Zoom accessible meeting. These presentations are based on a monthly umbrella theme. At the March, the theme is the mysterious mind, and each Sunday, some aspect will be presented as a forum, lecture, or panel discussion. For today, it will be a lecture talk entitled The Spectrum of Genius. The Wednesday study class meets from 7:30 until 8:45. We are continuing our study in The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. He recently completed the study of reincarnation and its twin, Doctrine Karma. This Wednesday, March 9th, we will begin to study the after-death states in Chapter 12. Topic is after-death states, natural separation of principles. The Friday evening discussion group is an informal gathering of students who meet from 6:30 to 7:30. The group recently completed Echoes from the Orient by William Q. Judge, and the new book, The Heart Doctrine, also by Mr. Judge, was begun last Friday with a discussion of the article, What the Masters Have Said. The article for this Friday will be made available within the next few days. The Wednesday and Friday meetings continue to be accessible through Zoom. These two meetings are not on site. Before the lecture begins, there will be a special announcement and the spiritual reading for today. Special announcement is that on Sunday, March 20th, is William Q. Judge Day. There will be a special presentation and a reading on Mr. Judge's life as philosopher, guide, and friend. Please mark your calendars and please plan to attend. And please come a few minutes early and get settled in. Now, for a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, entitled Devotion as Regards Renunciation and Final Liberation. It is Krishna who is speaking. Learn from me, in brief, in what manner the man who has reached perfection attains to the Supreme Spirit, which is the end, the aim, and highest condition of spiritual knowledge. Imbued with pure discrimination, restraining himself with resolution, having rejected the charms of sound and other objects of the senses, and casting off attachment and dislike, dwelling in secluded places, eating little, speech, body, and mind controlled, engaging in constant meditation and unwaveringly fixed in dispassion, abandoning egotism, arrogance, violence, vanity, desire, anger, pride, and possession. With calmness ever present, a man is fitted to be the Supreme Being. And having thus attained to the Supreme, he is serene, sorrowing no more, and no more desiring, but alike towards all creatures, he attains to supreme devotion to me. By this devotion to me, he knoweth fundamentally who and what I am, and having thus discovered me, he enters into me without any intermediate condition. And even the man who is always engaged in action shall attain by my favor to the eternal and incorruptible, imperishable abode, if he puts his trust in me alone. With thy heart, place all thy works on me. Prefer me to all else. Exercise mental devotion continually. Think constantly of me. By so doing, thou shalt, by my divine favor, surmount every difficulty which surroundeth thee. But if from pride thou wilt not listen to any words, thou shalt undoubtedly be lost. And if indulge in self-confidence, thou sayest, I will not fight. Such a determination will prove itself vain. The principles of thy nature will impel thee to engage. Being bound by all past karma to thy natural duties, thou, O son of Kunti, wilt involuntarily do from necessity that which in thy folly thou wouldst not do. There dwelleth in the heart of every creature, O Arjuna, the master, Ishvara, who by his magic power causeth all things and creatures to revolve mounted upon the universal wheel of time. Take sanctuary with him alone, O son of Bharata, all thy soul. By his grace thou shalt obtain supreme happiness, no place. Lecture today, Spectrum of Genius.
Thank you. So here we are considering the spectrum of genius, and immediately certain ideas come to mind because of the title. When we think of a spectrum, we think first of a white light, pure light, that passes through some sort of prism and then becomes this incredible array of a rainbow of colors and tints and tones. And so hidden within that kind of thinking is actually the key to our understanding the spectrum of genius, that area of the mysterious mind. You know, as we look around popular culture today, we see certain concerns, people fascinated with the brain-mind concept. We see all sorts of educational debates about how to test for intelligence. Should it be standardized testing? Should it be portfolio performance judgment? Is there a difference between someone's emotional quotient as genius and their IQ or intelligence quotient? We see educational reform in which teaching techniques deal with what's called multiple geniuses. We see parents trying to raise, quote, the super child, trying to maximize brain and mind function. And also we see increasingly the research into neuroplasticity and the areas of dementia and decline of mind and the loss of the spectrum of genius. So the student of theosophy is aware of the fascination of the public with this subject matter. And the student of theosophy is able to observe certain commonalities, no matter whether the seekers in the public are thinking about the brain alone, or whether they're considering mind as a mysterious entity and force, or whether they're just fascinated and curious about the spectrum of genius that they see around them. There are basically three commonalities that pop up. One is the underlying belief the untapped potential of human beings. There is common to everybody this notion of a great potential in the human state. Another point, a second point, is that there's great reliance on cause and effect in scientific and medical research, in theories of child development, in reform, in public education, so that we see this reliance, if you will, on the law of cause and effect. And the third thing that we see common to all thinkers currently is that there are great efforts of progressive thinkers and conservative thinkers alike to promote solutions for childhood development, to try to perfect the blend of nature and nurture. There's an apparent sense, an innate sense, that it's possible for a child to evolve into a highly functioning adult, if only the conditions are correct. But it is in the philosophy of theosophy that serious thinkers see explanations, if you will, of the mystery surrounding mind, the mystery surrounding the spectrum of genius. Theosophically speaking, the proposition is that there is soul resident in human kingdom, that it is capable of far more than what the conditions of existence currently allow, and that each and all of us are radiants of one spiritual source and equally capable of genius. We read in The Secret Doctrine the first fundamental proposition, quote, "It is only through a vehicle of matter that consciousness wells up as I am I, a physical basis being necessary to focus a ray of the universal mind at a certain stage of complexity." So we have universal mind akin to the white light that passes through the prism akin to the human state. And then the remarkable array of all the nuances of colors of manifestation of that white light, akin to this tremendous spectrum of genius. Theosophy also presents another idea to be considered, that there are artificial, partial, and true expressions of genius among us, all governed by reincarnation and karma, created by the free will and choice of the ego, the soul within. So we see that, as Judge taught frequently, that the philosophy states that the flame of genius isn't lit by an anthropomorphic God's hand, but by the hand of one's own spirit. It is the very nature of the spiritual entity itself, of our ego, which keeps on weaving new life threads into the web of reincarnation on the loom of time, from the beginnings to the ends of the great life cycle. Judge often was quoted as saying, "What we call the manifestations of genius in a person are only the more or less successful efforts of that ego to assert itself on the outward plane of its objective form." So key to this notion is the adequacy or inadequacy of the brain and body to transmit and give expression to the light of the real inner man. And this suitability or unsuitability is in its turn the result of karma. But we could talk as well about the range of intelligence and potentiality in the lower kingdoms, but for this morning, let's stick with the human state. The philosophy speaks of artificial genius. And we see within that there are certain trends that must have produced, logically produced, artificial genius. Desire, practice, devotional practice, the creation by will, desire, imagination, certain skandhas or bundles of tendencies created in past lives and effectively experienced in the current incarnation. We also see that certain conditions of life, brain, the body, the environment, opportunity, can allow or disallow the expression of these temporary forms of genius. And we see this artificial genius temporarily, frequently, in transitory child prodigies. The very young who are born with a particular aptitude, a particular talent, and they can express it for a time, and then it's gone. It's dissipated or it's lost in some way. We also can see that as an adult ages across an incarnation, there may be periods of this partial genius where expression of some talent or insight is possible, but it's not sustained. HPB wrote, born out of the chaos of a terrestrial sensations of perceptive and retentive faculties, yet of finite memory, it, the soul, will ever remain the slave of its own physical body. It is easier for the personality with its acute physical senses to gravitate toward the lower than to soar to its higher. So we see in that artificial, temporary form of particularized genius, this terrestrial aspect. Another form of artificial genius is often called partial expressions of true genius. You'll see that frequently throughout theosophical writing. And once again, there's the presupposition that there was desire at some point, that there was devotional practice and application of that desire, that with imagination, will, and desire, again, skandhas or bundles of tendencies were created, were generated, and sustained. The conditions of an incarnation allow for expression. But in a partial genius, we see both childhood prodigies as well as geniuses in a particular field in adulthood, in which the genius expression is sustained in a particular field. Very few are considered Renaissance men, where there's this amazing array of genius. But rather, in a partial genius, the creative processes are involved far more than just the physical processes. And we're thinking about artists, musicians, writers, philosophers, research scientists, inventors, who may have a specific specialized field representing their partial genius. And again, imagination is key. But the creativity, the power of the partial genius is one in one arena alone. It is once again frequently self-centered, personal, if you will. And then we come to that spectrum of genius that is above and beyond the artificial or the partial. True imagination, spiritual imagination, is the power to envision. It is the ability to see things as they really are. It is envisioning, making aspirations. The brain mind translates these visions as images, pictures, and can create outward effects on the basis of this process. Again, imagination is a spiritual power. All our desires arise from imagination. Imagination is creative, and in fact, Mr. Judge called it the master power. It is one of the plastic powers of the higher soul, the memory of preceding incarnations. It is affected by the lower mind. It's hampered or conditioned by the brain, certainly. Yet, true spiritual imagination always rests on a ground of truth. When used in conjunction with our will, imagination calls forth not only creative forces, but likewise creates their productions. It can be used for the materialization of images conceived in the mind to bring about the results that we desire. And it's far more than that. Examples of Renaissance man that we see in historical figures like Da Vinci or Thomas Jefferson. The true full bloom of the spectrum of genius is known to the student of theosophy as the enlightened ones, the masters, the elder brothers, the Mahatmas, the adepts. Once again, life after life, we consider that there is devotional practice, that there was desire, will, and imagination across durations of existence that produced this full genius, that the skandhas were self-created by the use of will and desire focused in past practice, that the conditions of a particular incarnation or a particular age of time have to be sufficient in order to express this full bloom of genius. And in the full bloom of genius, we see something more than creativity and devotional practice and desire. We also see that full-blown genius, the culmination of the spectrum of genius, is based upon ethical considerations, a value-added reality of altruism, a firm hold on the reality of universal brotherhood and the true nature of self. Imagination is certainly key, once again, but in the case of the full genius, it is totally self-controlled by the spiritual soul. All degrees of substance, all aspects of great nature, is totally under control of such a full bloom of genius. The brain and body has been made porous to allow the soul wisdom of the Bodhi principle to be expressed from within. Think of Jesus. Think of the Buddha, if you will. Blavatsky wrote that great genius, if true and innate, and not merely an abnormal expansion of our human intellect or the creation of a physical prowess, can never copy or condescend to imitate, but will ever be original, sui generis in its creative impulses and realizations. There's no random chance of a sempiternity or a specialized predestination by a deity. This spectrum of genius, ultimately expressing itself in the total bloom of what it is to be a self-conscious entity in the human state, that perfectibility is an ethical self-evolution. Blavatsky also stated that the dynamic force alone that can move the world is divine compassion with its twin, divine intelligence. And each of these evokes the other. In the Mahatma, in the perfected human soul, once this state of conscious genius is achieved, it is held eternally. And the source of that true genius, that culmination, again in the words of H.P.B., It is not from external conditions of existence. Rather, it manifests from within, outwardly, the innate and divine nature of man's oversoul. The flame of genius is lit by no anthropomorphic hand, save that of one's own spirit. So then we're presented with the course of action for students who are, shall we say, dealing with that aspect of genius that's far down on the spectrum and certainly may not even be considered artificial or partial. Where's the beginning point? Well, we're to bloom where we're planted, aren't we? Read the devotional books, ponder them, consider them, act as best we can altruistically in all situations that come to us. Meditate actively in an introspective way about our degree of compassion, our ability to express altruism and universal brotherhood, these eternal verities. Practice metacognition in the moment as much as possible. Detach in self-examination, not to be self-condemning, but rather to have a view that across time, in the cycles of the eons of incarnations, there is the spectrum of genius. And as we proceed, using will, desire, imagination, heartfelt, eternal verities, we too can bloom in genius and impress all soul in all states of consciousness to eventually bloom as well. I'm willing to bet that you came to this meeting this morning with your own considerations on the mysteries of mind and the spectrum of genius. SL?
It seems to be a public phenomena of late, last decade or so, that when confronted with prodigy genius manifesting itself in a child before the age of 10, especially where they not only show creativity, but an emotional intelligence and a creative intelligence far beyond their years, not just skill-wise, but experience-wise, they're able to express emotions that somebody might not really understand until their later years, that more and more you hear people say that they're an old soul in a young body, or that they, confronted with this, they firmly believe that they've reincarnated many times on Earth, and this is the expression of that. It's almost as though that people who would not normally talk about reincarnation are sort of inspired to talk about it, or in trying to deal with this presentation of early genius.
It's an excellent point. The general public, using just mind powers, if you will, you know, reasoning from premise to conclusion, they become tremendously puzzled by the mysteries of mind, but they still have that impress within, that concept within, that there's got to be far more than just the birth of this infant. How in the world could there possibly be a child who's under a year old but speaking like a 12-year-old? Where's the logic that a soul created for one life only has this tremendous a talent or expression of talent, or has what was just said, an incredibly sagacious point of view, a great depth of wisdom. How can that possibly be in a fresh new brain unless there was something prior to this incarnation? And we're told that from the beginning of manifestation of mind, spirit, and body over 18 million years ago, impressed within the spiritual nature, are certain intuitions, shall we say, certain spiritual instincts in the human. And among them is the truth of the deific source of all, of the cyclic manifestation of cause and effect, and that will bubble up as an explanation when other explanations fail. Lots of research ongoing right now. And for the student of theosophy, if we see one case of artificial or partial genius, physical or emotional or intellectual, if we see one case of a very young teenager conditioned and confined by autism, but still able to speak as an old soul at institutions like the United Nations, still calling forth for the protection of the entire planet. If we see it happen once, and we hold with this oversoul that manifests periodically, that manifests actively through the human state, doesn't that give us hope that if we see it one time, the potentiality is great? And if we can see these mundane terrestrial expressions, recognize them, isn't this more evidence for legendary and historical accounts of great souls that once walked among humans in golden ages? ULT, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you. We have a question from Theosophy Hall here. Go ahead.
It's interesting about this idea of the spectral genius, because it goes along with our discussion this past Wednesday on the different scopes of karma and how with the physical, mental, and psychic natures can be affected by karma. So we can look at the same idea with genius, like we could have a person who maybe is disabled to some extent, yet has this genius, we guess it would be a partial genius expression. So it's just interesting how the scope of karma can go along with this idea of a partial genius as well.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. The point about karma and the twin doctrine reincarnation is that second proposition of the three fundamentals upon which the philosophy is based is all-encompassing, absolutely all-inclusive. And so as students, we're hard-pressed when looking at karma to observe anything in manifestation without considering karma, without considering cause and effect, cycles of periodicity, action, reaction. And so it would stand to reason that all of these degrees of genius, ranging from the physical, perhaps athletic, all the way up through the talents of a mechanic who can fix any kind of engine with innate talent, all the way through all these partial geniuses, through the creative processes, all of it is explained in terms of cause and effect. One case that is a fabulous individual study, I would invite you to Google, if you will, Thomas Bethune, B-E-T-H-U-N-E. In the Ocean of Theosophy, he is referred to as Blind Tom. There are many historical documents now available on Google that explain biographically what his life was like, what his conditions were like. And as we're looking at all of that, there's no way in any one physical life that that body being used could have been the piano player that it was. And the piano, being a relatively modern instrument, also becomes a mystery. Unless and until, as we study the incarnation known as Thomas Bethune, and we see that soul far beyond the restrictions as an enslaved human being, probably an autistic or otherwise handicapped individual. As we look into that case, we see the workings of karma and reincarnation. It's remarkable. SL?
There was mention in the talk of the IQ test, which is mostly a measure of a certain type of intellectual cognitive ability. And as we understand it, the more advanced programs in our educational system use the criteria that you have to have an IQ of 130 or above, being a genius, representing the top few percentage of people that take the tests. And that's kind of unfair if that's how we make opportunities for education. But also, that cognitive ability is one of those skandhas.
Yes.
So it's part of our acquired nature. It may be there for a lifetime or obscured later in life by other skandhic tendencies, but it's not the genius of the soul. It's it's the refinement of the instrument in that particular life because of that skandha, and it's ultimately temporary.
It's extremely temporary, and it is tied to a particular brain at a particular point in time. All of those quantifiable tests, IQ tests, conation tests, college board exams, all of them, depending on the particular thinker and the brain in use, those scores all change across time. And those tests can be incredibly skewed, very, very specialized, so that they're set up using vocabulary and concepts that only a particular child with a particular life experience might be able to use and to recognize. So they're highly prejudicial in general, and greatly falling under suspicion now. But again, they all have to do with the lowest degrees of skandhas, the physical degrees of skandhas, the cognitive electromagnetic functioning of a physical brain. And we know that disease, that accidents in life, that nutrition or lack of nutrition, all of those things can change the physical brain across time. And haven't we all encountered at some point the cold, cruel use of logic by an extremely cognitively gifted, quickly processing human being who seems to have no heart? You know, it's a very interesting study to be done. Neuroplasticity at one time was taught to be totally fallacious, that the brain could never regenerate its function. And then across the last few decades has come the research of tremendous forces. We once knew an individual who, prior to 5 years old, had been born with cerebral palsy, had sustained multiple strokes, had literally lost one half of the physical brain. He graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, from the Wharton School. Does he have limitations? Yes. But there's something higher, far higher, in the spiritual soul that functions through those limited and damaged skandhas and can continue to bloom. MDW.
When we think of genius, we really think of in terms of mental capacity or expression. What of the heart? We've heard of great beings being very compassionate. Is that a form of genius?
Well, isn't the heart doctrine, the ability to think from the heart, isn't that part of that bloom of full genius that we call enlightenment? That full synthesis of spirit working through mind and working through physicality, working through psychic potentials. That genius of knowing, of being wise enough to know exactly how to help, how to empower another at exactly the right point in time. That's part of that spiritual genius, the culmination of full genius. ULT, your hand was up.
Okay, we have another question. Go ahead.
Well, the whole idea, we hear the phrase periodically checked by karma. And wouldn't some of these folks who have that partial genius, but for whatever reason, they are unable to express it, would that be considered the idea checked by karma? If it's one of those types of karma that is in force now, and maybe in the future, it would, you know, the person would be able to express it. But would that be the idea of checked by karma if they can't express their genius?
The conditions of karma, can, quote, check genius. And the conditions of karma can change, can't they? So in a recent ocean class, we were discussing abrupt changes in the course of someone's life, like the engineer that designed the Suez Canal, like the engineer that designed the Panama Canal. Also, students of history can look into shall we say military genius in quotes, or political genius, those folks that seem to have a charismatic talent for taking over nations. And frequently we will see circumstances in which suddenly, quite suddenly, some karmic change checks their ability to use that genius, their ability to proceed. And if you're interested in such a study, you can look into the life of Nero, the Roman emperor. You might look into the life of Napoleon Bonaparte of France. You might look into the life of Adolf Hitler, or more into current events, to see how a particular line of development of partial or artificial genius can suddenly be checked by karmic turns. SL, your hand was up too.
So when we look at a genius, especially true genius, such as exemplified by Buddha and Christ, we not only look at them as special, unique individuals in their own right, but special in the sense that they are not connected with the humanity or a representative of humanity. It's interesting that in the philosophy, we have the idea that these individuals are what we call sixth rounders. In other words, they are the examples of what humanity in general will be like far distant in the future. And so perhaps we could look at genius even in its lesser extents that way. These are individuals who through their own effort, individual effort, are but representations of what humanity and of the skills humanity in general will have at, in far distant periods of our evolution. So it gives us a whole different way of looking at genius. They are not different from us. They're just, you might say, models or examples of what any human being can achieve in time.
You know, the talk this morning was honed in a particular way, but another way to think about the title, The Spectrum of Genius, is to apply it to the whole concept of rounds and races. Now, there's an individual study that any of us can pursue on how genius, soul genius, spiritual, intellectual genius, self-consciousness proceeded across the eons until that final point where you've got the merging of three streams of evolution in the condition that we call the human state. And in that spectrum, you see consciousness, intelligence, the great mysteries of life resident in the mineral state, the vegetable state, the animal state, the psychic aspects or astral aspects of a human, and then gradually blooming in the human state where most of us are right now. And I don't want to say dangling before us because that's not the right impression, but lighting the path ahead of us. Are these enlightened ones, the Buddha, the Christ, those that are skipping ahead, they're rounds ahead of the vast majority of us. And what they are is the proof of the pudding, that in this spectrum of genius, from the beginning of a Manvantara to the bloom of the seventh great race of that Manvantara, there's this spectrum of genius that will unfold, but it unfolds by self-fulfilled and self-devised efforts. Personal responsibility, personal in terms of its expression in the physical, the psychic, the intellectual, but spiritual responsibility in that true eternal pilgrim that is incarnating over and over and over again throughout these rounds. ULT?
So it is very interesting. Recently we've had discussions about how certain inventions, certain new ideas, which we're told there's nothing new under the sun, really. So, but the classic example is Marconi and Tesla.
Yes.
Virtually coming up with the same idea is, at the same time, it's just who beat who to the patent office to get it and to get the recognition. So These geniuses we imagine are, you know, very sensitive to the astral light and to these past impressions that are embedded in there, and somehow they channel it, not like the channeling that, you know, not the psychic practice, but they do channel these ideas out of the astral, do they not? And so is this something anybody could come up with? Like the Philo Farnsworth with the television, he had this, he was obsessed with the idea for about, from boyhood until he came up with it. And then he kind of regretted ever, he says, look what I've done. I've just created something that's going to be an incredible time waster.
And yet, here we are in front of monitors this morning, a variation of a TV screen, certainly. Very grateful for the use of such a thing. across geographic divisions and across divisions of health and other considerations. So are all these geniuses hooked into the astral light? Well, aren't we all? And in potential, if the more active and self-fulfilled, self-devised we are, the more that we create that nucleus of universal brotherhood within, and we begin to act on that, all of these other talents, if you will unfold naturally, but are not suggested to be pursued until and unless that caveat that was mentioned in the talk is truly perfected. And that caveat is ethical development. Each of these full blooms of these six rounders, the Buddha, the Christ, and many, many others, each of them is ethically a full bloom of genius. That heart doctrine is absolutely in full exposure and expression. Why? Because across lives, across durations of experiences, great effort was made to understand absolute justice, to work with the harmony and the needs of great nature and the underclasses, the lower kingdoms, those humans perhaps that are less endowed or need empowerment in some ways. Each of them, each of those full blooms of Mahatmas, adepts, those souls that unfortunately have become to be labeled as deities too often, each of them knew that the eternal verities, ethics, morality, that is the basis for the spiritual coming forth of what it is to be a soul in a human state. Hassel?
It's very interesting. In the last few minutes, we've come to realize that genius is not a faculty. It's not the expression of a particular ability. Ultimately, it's a state of consciousness of ourselves as thinkers. So each one of us, as the ancients taught, are geniuses within our highest nature. We're divine in essence. So we each have the capacity to express our particular genius to the extent we can raise our thought and our will and our desire, all our faculties of mind, to that realization.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the imagery that the title provokes. The spectrum of genius. So therein, we have the white light of spiritual symbolism moving through the prism of the material, the human state of the lower physicality, astral and physical. That white light exists for each and all. It moves through a particular instrument, if you will. And what does it do? But it emerges in this tremendous variation of the spectrum of full expressions of all the colors and nuances, etc. And sometimes it's even a kaleidoscope effect where these tremendous arrays of the natural, the spiritual genius, is expressed in many, many different ways. And certainly in a meeting like this, the true power is that we come together as the radiance, like those many different colors and nuances in the kaleidoscope of expressions, but we can come back, move back through the human state together and approach again that Elias center, begin to approach the oneness of human spirit, natural to each and all, the true genius of each and all. And we try it individually, independently in our daily lives, certainly, but as a concerted effort in one of these meetings, look what we can do. MDW,
Well, we would say that the path to that true spiritual genius can be found between the pages of the Bhagavad Gita.
Our inspirational books, the Gita, primary among them, if you stop and think about the voice of the silence, Patanjali's yoga aphorisms, there are so many inspirational books that allow us to read between the lines, to use that genius of heart and head together, and to gain inspiration, to become in touch with the heart and the soul of what it is to be on this spectrum that we call humanity. But we are out of time. We've reached the end of the class. Please remember that Wednesday, March 9th, we'll be looking at the after-death states, the natural separation of principles. Next Sunday, the title will be Dreams and Visions of the Night. How's that for the mysterious mind? Have a great, great week. Take care.